Hello and welcome to the N17 podcast. My name is Cosmo and tonight I'm joined by Jed.
Yo.
And I'm joined by Eddie.
Hey man.
I would normally ask at this point how everyone's feeling, but it's pretty clear that everyone's only feeling one way. After...
I'm feeling ecstatic.
Really? What have you been watching, mate? What hobby have you picked up?
I've been picking up some gardening, like inspiration from the pictures that you sent in a couple of weeks ago, gardening in the back. So, yeah, man.
Gardening in the back? That sounds kind of sus. I can't lie.
Come on.
Is that an ad for Manscaped, Eddie?
All I was going to say is your Premier League season still ongoing? Because I don't know.
How many games have we got left now? Five?
Six
games. Bloody hell. Do you know what? This is the thing. Is that when Levy put Stellini in charge, it seemed like he was just trying to like see out the rest of the season. But 10 games is over a quarter of the remaining Premier League season. So, like, we've been in the mode of waiting for the season to end for over a quarter of the season. And we're still only at six.
It's 30 points that it was 30 points that we were just...
And arguably,
it is what it is.
You could arguably say it's been even longer than that because we knew where this season was going under Conte anyway. Because it felt like we were waiting for him to get the sack for, well, ever since the World Cup, really, innit? So, like, the fact that we finally come to that point and there was still so long of the season left to go, and we didn't even get through half of that period without getting rid of him.
Yeah. The whole second season of Conte has just been like playing on autopilot in terms of like hoping that we could just about get top four. But I don't think I could ever have envisaged it getting this bad. Like, I genuinely think every time we find a way to plumb new depths, like, I didn't think it could get any worse than this. And I saw Jack Pitbrook put up an article saying Spurs reached their nadir after that result. But honestly, it has got worse a day after. It's found a way to get worse. I know it's off-field matters, but it still has found a way to get worse. And it could still get worse on the pitch, couldn't it?
I think it will as well. That's the thing. It feels like we're almost on the beach now as well. A lot of players just...
Chernobyl Beach.
Yeah.
On the beach is normally the players are relaxed and you know, enjoying themselves.
Wherever Bobby got that phone case from.
We're not going to have to post a picture of that phone case on the main. Understand what that means.
We're going to have to cheer ourselves up whenever we can throughout this pod, I can't lie. But yeah, like, the players' confidence just seems shot to bits. Tactically, we can't not play a 3-4-3, and the 3-4-3 is disgusting. I think we did all welcome the change of the formation on the weekend, but as soon as I saw it, I just put LOL with like bare O's and everything in capitals. And I was like, this is lunacy. We're playing two wingers as fullbacks in a back four with a centre back, one centre back who can't defend, and the other centre back who only ever wants to play for Argentina.
Yeah, even implying that Romero can defend at the moment is kind.
yeah, especially after that first goal. I mean, him and Porro, fucking...
Chuckle Brothers, bro.
There must have been five Chuckle Brothers because all five of them at the back on the weekend.
I don't know. I can't even hack it. Well, even you said that we welcomed it, but realistically, I think me, you, maybe one other person said we're going to get battered when we saw the lineup.
Yeah.
We immediately said that lineup just spells trouble. Like, it wasn't just the fact that Perisic was playing left back, which is... It's an abhorrent decision.
A man that's played up front this season, by the way. This season.
Yeah, and, exactly. He's,
but like, ostensibly, he is a forward.
Yeah. Bro, even at wing-back, defensively, he's been, like, terrible. To play a full-back when he's that the two centre back on his side is Eric Dier. What did they expect? What did they expect? Honestly, and I do think that you know, Stellini has been on the receiving end of some pretty bad injuries to like key players, essentially in Davies, and I hesitate to say key, but yeah, in Davies and Longley, who are both left-footed players. If we ever wanted to consider playing the back four. And on top of that, just like our midfield injuries and injuries to Emerson, letting go of Doherty, it all just added up to this lineup. But by God, I could not believe what we had to witness, genuinely, because it felt like Astro. It felt like, it felt, like not even Astro, or maybe like, you know, when you were playing Sunday League, but you were 10 and you were clearly playing the best team in the league. And they just piped you 3-0 in the first 5 minutes. And you're thinking, cool, could be a might have to hold 17 today. It felt like that.
It's so mad you say 17, because today I had a thought, and Cosmo will understand this. My last season at Winchmore Hill, when we played Brimsdown, and we got pumped like 17 or 18-0 on one of the first games of the season.
Yeah. I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up, to be honest.
I had my Højbjerg moment. I was creasing. It got to a point 10-year-old me was creasing that like this was actually happening.
I still don't understand how that happened. How can a team actually lose 18-0 regardless of the level? do you think, because we were a decent team, bear in mind that he didn't play for us then, but Carl Walker-Peters was at one point a member of this football team. So I don't know how the hell we managed to do that, but yeah, I didn't think we'd be mentioning Winchmore Hill on the Spurs pod. But how many goals do you think Newcastle could have got if they just continued playing at the same rate that they did for the first 20 minutes?
It would have got double digits. And honestly, I was actually really concerned that it might. Like, at the rate it was going, it would have got there in the first half. It would have got to at least 9 in the first half. And we're just lucky that Newcastle done that same old thing that every team does in that situation, where they just take everything out of the game, and just because they don't need to play with that intensity for the rest of the game. Game's done. And for me, the most demoralizing thing to see was, and not anything against him at all, because I actually think he's our best player on the day. Seeing your own team bring on a player to stop the scoreline getting bad. Sanchez coming on at 20 minutes in for a midfielder.
At five.
At five. Like, I almost felt that crying. I didn't, because I shouldn't even be saying that. But like, how am I supporting a team that's doing this? We're bringing on a defender by the way, this team a year ago, and we know all the money, the investment that Newcastle had. This team a year ago were fighting relegation, and they've brought in, they've obviously added to their squad. Our squad's still better than them. Our squad is still far better. Yeah. And I think with the setup, I think, yeah, we've all been calling for the four at the back, but you don't just put that four, you don't just put that lineup up out against a team as who are like so structurally prepared and probably one of the most settled side tactically in the league at the moment. You can't just put that team out and think, yeah, fuck it, there you go, have your four at the back. You can't do that against a really well-drilled Newcastle team. It's always going to go bad.
We held five in 20 minutes. I'm actually deep in it. We held Wood. We actually held Wood.
It's
and Wood even plays for them.
It's not, he don't play for them no more.
We used it.
But yeah, when I saw Sanchez coming on, and I'm actually glad he came on and had the performance. I say the performance he did. It's not like he was amazing, but we conceded one when he came on. So
yeah,
but it was just demoralizing to see it.
The thing is, this is why Stellini is gone, because like we could have seen we're not football managers. We could have seen, if you are going to go to the forward back, we've said this in the group chat so many times, we're like, we can go to the forward back if we play another centre back on the left or potentially the right if we had like a better wing back than Perisic. But obviously you would probably prioritise Porro, who at the end of the day costs £45 to £50 million for us. But there's been so many times when we've like written in the group chat being like, oh, I want to go to four at the back. And then we just clock. We're like, we don't have the players to play it. So the fact that Stellini actually tried to do this, and to be fair, even Ryan Mason went along with this, it's really concerning. Like, I think Mason did a good job when he came in last time, but I don't know, man. Like, sometimes we talk about the stench of the squad being on a lot of players. Surely he's completely tainted whatever chance, because apparently he was quite well thought of in the game, Mason, but I don't see how he can emerge from this with any credit in these remaining six games.
I guess it's just results, isn't it? He's got to somehow steady what is a rapidly sinking ship. And obviously we're not in like any immediate danger in terms of like getting relegated this season, but for him to maintain any sort of reputation, because if he does want to go on to be a coach, he just has to steady the ship now. It can't get ugly against United. It can't get ugly against Liverpool. We're not expecting to win those games, but we can't have two more games of that. We can't. A manager's been sacked off the back of it, and who was only meant to be here for 10 games. We can't. It's the only way he can maintain any sort of reputation for himself. And I'm hoping that the players won't let it get to that, because they seem to have a lot more respect for Mason. So maybe that will go a long way to sort of wanting to at least do it for him.
Do you think it's possible for him to, you know, not hold like 4-0 against United?
I think it's possible, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen. It might, especially on the back of a game like that, it might just be about really like solidifying in defense, not solidifying in defense, but literally going like very defensive, which a lot of our lineups have looked anyway this season.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know at this stage of the season as well. I don't know how you can sort of come back from a defeat like that. It's hard.
Is it going to be a return to the back five, do we think?
I think, well, it has to be. It has to be returned to the back five. We don't have the facilities to be a back four. Davies, he's been out and he hasn't trained. And to throw him in against United probably isn't the best thing to do. And then you have Longley again. Not a fullback, and we've seen in those wide areas he gets very exposed. Even reverse Fisher against Newcastle, getting absolutely skinned by Almiron, just like another indication that he's just not suited for those wide roles. So playing him at left back will probably end in disaster again. But we have to do something to stop that abject defensive performance. Whether that's five at the back and three in midfield. Do you know what I mean? There has to be something. It has to be a change. But the shock of the result wasn't just on us. You could even see it not only on the Tottenham faces, but the Newcastle players as well. They couldn't believe what was happening. When Isak puts away that fifth goal, he's thinking, what's actually going on with this? Is this really who we're fighting against for top four? I'm hitting shots like I'm playing against my kid in the backyard and it's going underneath the goalkeeper. What's going on here? That's probably what he's thinking. And that's definitely what I'm thinking. So, yeah, man. I don't know if I'd even play Lloris in the next game.
Oh, come on. No, you can't play again, surely. Surely.
Yeah, might be the last time. Well, I hope it's the last time we see him. In a way, wish his contract was up this summer, because there would be no way that we could be offering him another one. And I do worry that they're just... I mean, they can't surely, but I do worry now that they're just going to think, oh, just give him one more year because this is last year of his contract. We can't afford to do it. We can't.
I mean, I think like the fact that Forster actually even improves on Lloris, it shows like how much the quality has dropped, because we could literally sign probably like a backup from, I would even say like Newcastle Palace, like Dubravka, Sam Johnston, Guaita, they all improve us. And that shows Lloris is finished. It's not even a decline. He's just finished. Among many of the players, that's the concerning thing. And I think one of the things, Eddie, when you said that Isak was laughing in disbelief, one of the things that's been lost purely because of the shock of the result is that this is potentially a massive signpost for the shift in power from Spurs to Newcastle. We didn't think it would come this quickly, but to get beaten 6-1 like that, it's almost like a metaphor for these like these state-owned clubs just being able to like swat away the teams that were previously incumbent in the top six. So, I mean, do you think long term this kind of signposts the end of Spurs in the top six? Is it possible to rectify it? Can we get ahead of Newcastle again? What do you guys think?
I said in a group chat today that like the direction that the club is heading currently, we're destined for like mid-table mediocrity for the next couple of seasons, just because the size of the restructuring and like the magnitude of the issues at Spurs has now got to like a point where it's going to take more than one season to fix, akin to kind of like the problems that Manchester United and Liverpool had, where they were relegated to being fifth, sixth for several seasons, even like Liverpool going to like seventh, eighth for a few seasons. And I think we're destined for that on the current trajectory. Obviously, sometimes it gets to a point where clubs are a bit too big to fail, but I don't think Tottenham are big enough. It really, 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 really matters who we appoint next. Like, it's beyond crucial. And it's beyond crucial that we commit to that direction. Otherwise, if we get another stopgap, another kind of chance, a massive swing and miss, yeah, I think we could just be a mid-table club for a while, because you have to factor in the age of some of our best players, the fact that some of our best players won't renew. It's a bleak picture, if to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and one of those managers that we could have appointed, Maurizio Pochettino, you know, goes without saying, completely loved by the fans. We've been singing his name for the past 2-3 games, is about to join our bitter rivals, Chelsea. I kind of wish we started with this, but it was impossible to like not talk about the game, but because I just don't want to turn the whole podcast into a complete shit sandwich. But the situation is, that's what Spurs is right now, and this is almost like a footballing god just completely trolling us at this point. The fact that it's been announced today after the ridiculous communications coming out of the club, I mean, that statement from Daniel Levy, like, as soon as I saw it, I didn't even open it at first, and it was like a statement from Daniel, and I was just like, why have they just called him Daniel? Like, it reminded me of when David Cameron was like, call me Dave kind of thing. I'm like, why is this guy trying to be relatable and being like, oh yeah, no, it's just Daniel checking in here. Like, no, mate, this is the biggest crisis the club has ever been in. Don't come with, oh, Daniel checking in. I just want to say I'm really, really disappointed and we're going to try and get to the next level. And then ending it with Coy's, Daniel was just insane. It was just a completely insane statement. And then for an hour or two after that, for basically a lot of journalists to say that Poch to Chelsea is nearly done. I mean, I want to say it can't get any worse than this, but Glenn said that two episodes ago. I feel like it probably can, but yeah. How have you guys taken the news of Poch basically joining Chelsea now?
Tough. I'm not going to lie. I didn't think it would like hit me as tough as it would, purely because I just thought like he wouldn't actually do it, and like they would even go with someone else over him. To me, if he does this, which it seems like he's going to now, he's dead to me. And I know a lot of fans on Twitter are saying that. And again, every week we say it, it's the hatred for Enoch. And yes, Enoch make a lot of wrong decisions. But for them to say they're happy that he's going there, because it essentially puts even more pressure on Enoch. And that's probably right. It probably does put the pressure on Enoch more. But to say you're happy that he's going there, it's insane to me. How can this guy is probably the only manager who's brought pure joy to me as a Spurs fan in my whole entire life, apart from winning one measly League Cup where I was young and I was just gassed because obviously it's a cup. I haven't ever been as happy supporting Spurs as I have under Poch. And he finally gave me something to be proud about, supporting Spurs. Him, and actually I want to bring Harry Kane into it as well, because I think there was also news coming out today that it's looking unlikely Harry Kane's going to sign a new contract this summer.
Who can blame him?
And yeah, and that's, so the difference between them two for me is that with Harry Kane, you can't blame him. He has given us plenty of chances now, and we just haven't matched his ambition. The club are actually in decline now. So with Kane, if he goes, I can't blame him. But Poch, you just don't, you don't join our rivals, the rivals that were apparently our biggest rivals at your time at the club, the rivals who are literally in bed with our biggest rivals, because they're creating this whole fuck Tottenham narrative in the Premier League, where pretty much every team in the league hates us, probably because of them two, because you see these two teams playing each other and singing about Tottenham. They should be rivals. They are the two biggest teams in London. They should be the rivals, but no, they get together and they sing about Tottenham. And Poch will be fully aware of how much we as fans hate Chelsea, of how much they hate us. And me personally, I think if Poch had any respect for Spurs fans, and listen, I'm not saying he can't go out and get another job elsewhere, but come on, man, Arsenal or Chelsea, you just don't do that. And Poch seems like a very aware guy, and he will know what it means to Spurs fans if he's going to go there. And I don't know. It's wild to me that he even considered it. I know it's a big job and it's a very good squad, but it's very upsetting, man. I can't lie. I really didn't expect it from him.
Well, yeah. I mean, you sent that video of him basically being very emotional, saying he wants to come back to Spurs to win a title before he dies. The idea that a person who can have that emotion is gonna be in the Stamford Bridge dugout while they sing. Literally, as their team walks out, they sing "We hate Tottenham, Chelsea." It's just, it's insane to me, man. It's insane that he's going to do this. And I mean, it should hurt probably in this. Obviously, we were too young for the whole Sol Campbell situation, but it should hurt in the same way as it did with Sol Campbell joining them. But I almost feel like, because of how shit the club is at the moment and the amount of crisis we're in, I genuinely feel a bit numb to it. Maybe I'm just not acknowledging the reality of what's about to happen. But something in me does feel like I'm not feeling rage, but I feel like maybe it's because I just don't want to accept what's about to happen. Eddie, how do you feel about it?
Well, you know, Jed, you were saying that we're going to have to cheer ourselves up in this pod. I think one of the main reasons Chelsea are going to get Poch is because at least they'll have another song to sing apart from Chelsea.
But I don't want to hear that either. I can't hear the Chelsea fans chanting. Just let them sing their Chelsea songs.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, that's probably one of the main reasons they got him. Aside from that, devastated, man. I remember when Tottenham got into the Champions League final, obviously we saw the interview after the game where he's crying, want to thank the fans, blah, blah, blah. And I remember being like, yeah, I'm gonna give my son, Maurizio is going to be his like, middle name or some shit. The reality is, like, the club.
Eddie, you could always do that. You could always do that when we employ Sarri.
Tottenham bingo, man. It can happen, man. It can happen. Nagelsmann doesn't go well. But anyways, I think the reality is that football has this way of like building you up and crushing you at the same time, because even when you're at the heights, something like this can happen. And the most defining thing about his Tottenham career is that he didn't win anything with us. Like it is. And for there to be a situation where he goes to Chelsea and then in one season he gets like a domestic cup or something, you know, it's really tough. And I think that if with my logical mind, I think about that Chelsea squad, I think about the investment that they can have, I think about his way of playing, they've got plenty of young players, it's a good job for him. And if they want him, then it's a good job for him. But my heart is just, it's full of rage and disappointment and sadness, because I don't know. I don't think you should, you know, you should be consigned to loyalty for life. But it's so fresh. Like, he was manager of Tottenham like four years ago, or whatever, four or five years ago. And now he's going to Chelsea, and the club's like going through an accelerated rotting. And we're in complete freefall. And it's completely down to the board. They made that decision. They made the decision to completely shut out Potch as an option, even though it was initially reported that he was one. If he was one, then he was there. We could have got him. I don't think, but I'm not under any illusion that it was a hard thing to do. I'm sure he would have come back, and I'm sure the majority of people would have gotten behind that appointment, even though I've said on the podcast that I don't think Tottenham should do that. If they did want to do that, then they could have done that, and they haven't. And now we're in this situation, and they can't, they cannot say that this is something that they're upset about, the people at the club, because they could have prevented this from happening. And if we now don't get Nagelsmann, like really, if we don't go and get Nagelsmann, we're in a real, real pickle, because you don't have the emotional backstop of Poch where you can get the fans on side. You don't have the excitement of someone who is on the cutting edge of football like Nagelsmann. You're not going to get the fans on side for an Ange or a slot appointment. You won't. It will be impossible after what's happened. So this is a really, really difficult situation for Tottenham.
I'm not sure Poch is even... Like, Jed, you say he's very aware, but I'm not sure he's even thinking this through clearly. Like, to me, this almost feels like a kind of emotional, angry decision at this point. I almost feel like he's been scorned by the beef with the board, with, like, Donna Cullen and stuff, and he hasn't thought through the fact that these fans don't like him. This is almost like a George Graham-style appointment for them when Graham came to Spurs after managing Arsenal, because they will turn on him genuinely. If he doesn't do well in, like, his first four games, he'll be gone pretty soon. I don't think they're going to give him extensive backing. And Chelsea, yeah, Eddie, you say, like, they do have great players, they've got a great squad, and he could get them... When you were saying that, I was thinking, yeah, with his pressing style, he could get them to win the league next season. But equally, it's a very volatile situation. They still have the same problems of having 40 players. he could be gone by September next season. And he's going to be completely diminished as a legend for Spurs. We always used to say we don't want him to come back because we don't want him to tarnish his legacy. I mean, he's tarnished it way more than he ever could have coming back now.
Yeah.
Because I've just seen by the BBC that BBC will only report things late. They're now saying he's in advanced talks to take over. So it's basically done. He's basically their manager now.
And when Eddie was talking there about, like, he might win them a domestic trophy, they don't even care. And perhaps that's because it's a club that are obviously they are a very successful club in terms of modern football. So they do get to experience winning stuff often, but they seem like a club that never has any connection with their managers whatsoever. And that just doesn't seem like Poch. Poch is obviously a very emotional guy, who wants to put 100% into a project. And although I'm not saying he won't get that backing from the players, because he probably will, because he's obviously a very charming guy. I think we all, as Spurs fans, warmed to him very quickly when he came to the club. But Chelsea fans just don't do that. And that's, for me, that's the most frustrating thing, because I feel like you're selling your soul a little bit just to go to a club like that where you're not even going to be appreciated. And you're chucking your relationship away with a club who have literally been chanting your name for the past 2-3 weeks. And you're going to one of their biggest rivals. It stinks, man. It stinks. And for him to say, yeah, you're right, Cosmo, I was wrong. Why did I think he was aware? Why did I think it's a cop out for him to sit there and say, oh, I don't think that my ties with Tottenham will be an issue managing Chelsea. It's bollocks, man. The whole thing stinks.
Yeah. And Eddie, you say that the next appointment has to be Nagelsmann. I mean, what is he going to walk into? What is Nagelsmann going to walk into if he does take over? I can't see. I think Levy, in these last 10 games since the Stellini appointment, I think he's done so much damage to us that I don't think Nagelsmann is going to want the job. Kane is surely going to leave. Then you've got a club captain, Lloris, who's basically got to the point where he doesn't look like a professional footballer anymore. Then you have all of the deadwoods that we have to get rid of. It's so bleak. And going back to what I said about when we had 10 games to do something, I remember saying before, because the Southampton rant by Conte was before the Milan second leg, right? Or was it after?
I can't remember.
Either way, there was a terrible result where Conte did come out and was basically lambasting the players right before Milan away. Milan at home. And I remember saying then, even though we have 3 days to appoint him before Milan at home, we should appoint Poch. And I think if we did do it, even then, this end of the season, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. I think we would have beaten Milan, because I think we would have played a 4-2-3-1, which we had the players to do then. And Milan were terrible that night. Milan are in the Champions League semi-final now. Milan were terrible that night. If we had Poch, we would have beaten them. And we would be looking forward to this end of the season, probably arguably still in some kind of top four race. Instead, the whole place is in decay, man. This is... Yeah, yeah. Can you guys see Nagelsmann taking the job?
No.
Slightly. This.
You reckon, though?
Like, there's something about it that just thinks of, he comes in. Do you not think so? I think there's something about it that just like stinks of, if you allow me to come in, just give me free reign over the whole club. Let me do what I want to do, which he didn't really have at Munich, which is the reason why he clashed foot. Because there are established characters and a hierarchy at the club, and the hierarchy at our club needs to be destroyed and rebuilt. And if he's able to do that and has the opportunity to, then it, I'm not saying it's an attractive proposition, but it might be one that he could undertake because he's young and it won't affect it. Like it may affect his career short term if it's like a big failure, but he's still got so much time. So he can recover from a bad appointment if it is a bad appointment. So there is like part of me that thinks that that would be the reason why he would take the job. But yeah, I just have to go back to that. I have to go back and reiterate that that is the appointment that we have to make to get the fans anywhere close to onside. Because if we don't get him and we do a slot or an Ange, which by the way, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do, but I am saying that it's going to be a tougher road back to any sort of success.
Agreed. We're running low on time, so let's go to a little break and come back for part two. Welcome back to part two. We're just chatting a little bit off air in terms of what things will look like next season. And we realized we haven't really spoken about what's going to look like, what things are going to look like for the rest of the season in terms of, you know, the significance of bringing Mason back. We said that it wouldn't happen on the last podcast, that Stellini probably would remain in charge until the end of the season. But I don't know, is there any way you can see a positive coming out of this? Could it potentially galvanise the players, even the fans? At least we have a manager that we can kind of get behind because he is ultimately one of our own. My worry is that he has been tainted by the management team he's been working under. What do you guys think?
Either by result of just like working with them, or the circumstances that led him here. Unfortunately, he's not going to be too much, I don't think. I think what the problem is with the squad and the way that we're playing currently is that we're only suited to play in one way. We can only really sit up one way. Especially with the injuries that we have now, it's almost impossible to make a significant change to that playing style and the pragmatism of that team. So it has to be like a more of an emotional response under Mason. Like Jed said, do the players respect him more? Are the fans going to get behind him more? There's more to do with that than any significant changes to the club or team or players. I just want to do like a mini segue at this point because I didn't mention it on the pod last week, but it just like it just highlights the how detached I am from Spurs. I was out after the Bournemouth result, and I said to you, man, like literally was in like five guys, and like Lucas Moura just walks in, and then like sits next to me, literally sits next to me actually. Not even basically. And I just didn't have the energy to even speak to him. I didn't speak to him. I didn't ask him anything. The only thing I actually wanted to ask him was, like, had he spoken to Davinson Sanchez, like, to ask him if he was all right. But aside from that, like, and I don't think, by the way, I think he's after, you know, like, after the last game, he's available to play or something like that. Bruv, I know Mason's just come in. I still don't want to see him stinking about the gaff. I don't know, like stuff like that. I don't want those changes. I don't want any kind of roll of the dice with Mason, even though he plays players we saw like a couple of seasons ago with like people that he's familiar with, friends with. And I'm sure that Lucas might be one of those players. I just don't want to see him near the team. But yeah, I guess that's partly a point to do with Mason, partly to do with like I just don't care about Tottenham anymore. Well, that's a lie, but I don't care about Tottenham as much this season. But yeah, I just don't expect any significant changes this season just because there's only six games left and the squad is so geared to the way that we're playing now. You can't unmarry the squad from the formation.
Do you not think he could maybe go to like a 4-2-3-1 and play like Longley or Davis on the left, potentially?
I think it's hard. I was listening to the Athletic podcast today, just the football one, not the View from the Lane. And I think it was Jack on there saying that the players are so wedded to the Conte way of playing in the way that they've had no freedom whatsoever. They've been told you have to pass here, you have to move there for a year and a half now. And that's why just going from a 3-4-3 to the 4-3-3 on the weekend, it's not just something you can click your fingers and it's just going to work. Like, the way that these players have been told to play over the last 18 months is incredibly rigid and structured. And it's not just as easy as like Mason going to come in and completely change that. It's going to take a preseason essentially for these players to get out of those methods and sort of just have that freedom again. There was a picture that Nathan from the Etzer Inch put on Twitter after the game, and although we were playing in a back four, when Newcastle turned the ball over, Perisic was basically in the left wing position and Porro was out of shot. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you're playing a back four, you can't afford to do that. And that is by, because they still thought they were playing in a back three, and that's where they've been told that they need to be. So I think, listen, obviously tactically Mason isn't going to do anything revolutionary anyway. He's done some decent things in the past, obviously the Dyer to midfield against Man City, but I just think at this stage of the season, it's not just going to be as easy as just 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, and then everything's going to be all right. I think he'll do it, and it might be refreshing to see something a bit different, but to unlearn this way of playing, it's going to take a preseason, possibly even more than that.
Yeah, and looking ahead to next season, obviously, we can only hope now, Eddie, as you said, I think you emphasised it correctly in terms of like, we can only hope that Nagelsmann comes in. I think that's the only thing that's gonna not even save Levy, just save us. I think that's the only way that this is gonna be some kind of success. But if that did happen, do you think maybe like scorched earth policy would be the correct way to move? Because kind of can't get any worse than it is right now. In terms of Poch going to Chelsea, especially, that's like the icing on the cake on top of everything. Do you think we should just like move on from the likes of Kane and just completely clear everything and just burn it all down? I mean, there is the caveat that probably Chelsea are the most in a position to sign Kane with having Poch and having the resources that they have. Personally, I don't know. What would you guys do if they offered like 120 million for him?
I think luckily I don't think they would. I don't think that Chelsea would offer that much for Kane. I think you've seen with Todd Bowley, the one thing that's kind of consistent with all his signings is they are on the younger side, like 20, I think maybe 25 is the oldest that they've signed. So I think they're looking to the future with their signings, however erratic, you know, the signings have been. But yeah, just with Kane on the, you know, verge of turning 30, 1 year left in his contract, it's a lot of money. And I do think that they can get someone like Osimhen for not much more. Someone like, you know, Goncalo Ramos maybe. Although I seem to be the one that keeps on pushing for him, but just players like that, I think that Chelsea would be in a position to get those players who have that kind of European pedigree and have the age on Kane. They won't have the Premier League experience, and Kane is probably the best striker in the world. But I don't know. On the flip side, to answer your question about scorched earth policy, I think that that's the way to go. I don't know if we have the capacity or even the bravery to move on from some of these players, whether we have that cutthroat edge to get rid of players like Dyer, who have been at the club for a long time. Because what we were talking on at, you know, Saturday night, which I won't get too much into, but we were just saying that we've been so bad at selling players. It's not been so much about buying players. It's about the fact that we've been so, so bad at selling players that that's the reason why our squad looks like this. Do we have the capacity to get rid of these players? I don't know, because we've been so bad at it in the past. But I would like to see, us sell this season, clear out the squad. But it's difficult, man. We couldn't do it under Paratici. We basically just loaned everyone out. We're basically paying to loan these players out. To what end? So, yeah, I don't know. We have to recoup something from these players. If it's not, if it's not success, we have to recoup some money from them.
Yeah. I personally, like, there's been times in the past where I've been like, some of these players need to get another chance or could get another chance under a different manager. And potentially we will be in a situation where we have to do that because we might not have enough money to invest across the whole squad. But I'm now at a point where I'm done with so many of these players. Like, I'd happily, and this will sound like an exaggeration, but when you consider all of the players that are going to come back from loan and how big the squad is going to be, I think 8 to 10 players out the door, I'd happily take that.
I think that's generous. You take it, but even then it's still generous. I think there has to be, at this point, mine honestly, a squad, but it feels like it's got to be nearly 3/4 of the squad that has to go. And I think it's not realistic for one window.
No.
I completely agree with both of you that, like, I do think whoever comes in, and hopefully someone like Nagelsmann, because I think that's someone you can really trust to do that. But is Levy finally ready to give up that sort of power and that sort of control? Is, in terms of finally, like you said, Cosmo and Eddie, being very cutthroat and getting rid of the players that need to be gotten rid of, and giving him a decent budget to actually bring the players in. I don't know what our financial situation looks like, so it's hard to say, but I think it's more about getting players out at this stage, just because the squad is going to, we're going to end up with a Chelsea squad and have about an eighth of the quality. So yeah, there is players coming back that maybe someone like Noggles moved to be a tune out of, like, Lascelles. So, like, maybe Reguilon, I don't know. He looks a bit broken as well.
Mm.
Spence, perhaps, I don't know. But even then, it's like 2 or 3 players and the rest still need to go. So I don't know, man. I just don't. We've been in this situation before. And Levy hasn't been willing to give them that power. I know the situation is probably the worst it's ever been now, but hopefully he finally sees the light. And I know in that statement today, he started to take some responsibility, whether that's just saving face and just saying it because he thinks it's the right thing to say or whether he actually means it, I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think we'll end on this unless you guys have anything else to bring up, but what do you think the atmosphere is going to be like on Thursday, home against United?
Bad. Very bad. I don't. Are many people
going to? The responses to Tottenham's tweets today.
Yeah, the Levy out pictures.
Yeah, but there's like 300 under, 400 under every post.
Every pretty much every other reply is the Levy out picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know. I think the pot stuff has obviously made everything even more. It's going to make everything even more toxic. If we go,
they can't even chant his name. They can't even chant his name.
Exactly. Oh, well, if you're going by that guy off Twitter, then maybe.
Yeah.
But I dread to think what it will be like if we go 1-0 down early doors. But Again, it might not even be Spurs fans. It might just be a lot.
Well, that's the thing. I think for like a few games recently, I think my cousin Louis, like he sorted out some tickets for some people, and they were just coming down to London. Neither of them supported Spurs, so it's been like that for a while.
Yeah.
But this would be a whole other level. I think it does have the potential to be one of the most toxic atmospheres in the history of the Premier League, if it was a lot of regulars. But I think so many regulars are selling their ticket. I don't think Glenn will be going. I heard James Moore on the Spurs podcast said that he's put his ticket on the exchange. So, you know, that's two season ticket holders that we know of. And then I'm seeing plenty of people on Twitter saying the same thing. I don't know. Maybe it would be a good message if it was like only three quarters full.
It's such a big game as well.
Yeah, but I just don't see that happening. I think people will go.
It's a big game in terms of the two teams that are playing, but context-wise, it doesn't actually feel big. We're fifth, but we're not really fifth.
Mm-hmm.
We're 10th. It's like, I can't believe the conversation around it is still like Man United versus Tottenham in Tottenham's top four chase. It's been gone for so long now, and I don't know. I said it last week. Maybe a season out of Europe will do the next manager good. Not having to focus on playing midweek games against teams that we don't really need to be playing. Although it might be good for giving some of these youngsters a chance finally, which we never seem to do anyway. But I think a season out of Europe altogether next year could be beneficial, perhaps.
Great pod, mate. This has really lifted my mood, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I have to agree. I think season out of Europe could be a good thing, but you have to say that, like, thank God we actually did get the points that we had, because the fact that we're probably going to get next to nothing out of our last 10 games, I mean, it's relegation form right now. And it probably will be relegation form to the end of the season, which, I mean, we've seen before, but sometimes when teams end seasons really badly, it does carry over into next season, as happened with Leicester. So yeah, maybe it can get even worse.
Listen, one positive thing I will say before we go off is that, and whether or not you want to believe ITK and stuff like that, the names that we're hearing for manager choices now are at least positive names, in the sense that it's Nagelsmann, it's a slot, it's an Ange. So stylistically, we look like we're finally moving away from what it has been the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree with you, Cosmo. It could, if we finish the season terribly, it can be hard to recover that. But it's just about getting to the end of the season now and refreshing.
Yeah.
All those names, I need to get Steve Cooper.
Oh, don't. No. Eddie, man.
He's not on the podcast next season.
You know, they say, sometimes we say like, recording these pods can be like therapy. It's good to like get things out. But they do say with therapy, there is a certain point where you've plumbed so many depths that it actually, you come out of some therapy sessions feeling worse than you went in. And that's kind of how I feel today. I was saying that I felt numb about the whole Pochettino stuff, but I really don't. I think it's just setting now, and this is fucking awful, man. This is awful. But anyway, thanks for listening.